Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, I hope all's well, man. Hope you're having a great day. Tough times in your palace over the weekend. No, you almost lost command of those buffalo wings, but man, it's October now, so no worries. Spooky season is here. Go and grab that hoodie, get that blanket, the pumpkin spice, whatever. We got trades. We got media day energy. We got the finals matchup in the WNBA set. We got the season around the corner. Yeah.
It is fall season. It's spooky season. It is full-blown hoop season. We got a lot to talk about. Just a brief programming note. As Steve mentioned, we do have the finals matchup. We are saving the finals preview for the next episode. We are jam-packed. And as the NBA season is around the corner, we are starting our division previews as we do yearly. So we're going to have a lot of fun with those. We're starting with the Southwest today. But first, we got news. We're going to dig right into it. Drew Holiday, you are a Boston Celtic. How about that? Replacing Marcus Smart with Drew Holiday this offseason is interesting. But anyway, the Celtics getting Drew Holiday. The Blazers, for now at the very least, have Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams III, a 2024 first-round pick from Golden State. It is top four protected, I believe, and an unprotected 2029 first-round pick from Boston. Steve, how do you feel about the Drew Holiday fit in Boston?
I mean, just look at what Brad Stevens himself said. He said, there's a list of guys that you would want to be at Boston Celtic. Drew's on that list. It makes perfect sense. If you were someone who had defensive concerns about the Celtics with the addition of Porzingis, with losing Marcus Smart, you fixed a lot of that very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be pure apples to apples. Marcus Smart has a particular switchability. And while Drew can switch, there are some that I don't think he can do. But if you like what Smart brought to the table, I can't see how you won't like it with Drew Holiday. Like, Drew Holiday and Derek White are going to cause chaos defensively. And those two and their ability to be active on the ball, to pressure the ball, to be locked in on the weak side, that could and should, in theory, lessen some of the pressure on Kristaps Porzingis in pick and roll. Help him focus on his part of the program, lessen some of what Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have to do. Because either they'll be able to help or they'll have help. They'll have different matchups. Like, to me, if you look at a Drew, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford lineup, I think it's going to cause a lot of chaos. What was your initial thought? Because I have a secondary one that I don't think people are talking enough about. That is a tease. B+ from me.
Good stuff, Steve. Good stuff, Steve. I'm right there with you. Like, I just think you zoom out with this offseason with Boston. You trade Marcus Smart. You get Kristaps in the building. And one of the questions that you have, beyond the obvious on-court benefit of Marcus Smart and what he brought defensively and stuff, it's, hey, where is this toughness, this energy, this leadership, et cetera, is going to come from? Like, who's going to help you with that edge? I think Drew's going to help you with that edge. And then you bring it back to just the pure on-court basketball stuff. His ability to navigate screens. His ability to guard up and down the positional spectrum. Again, not to, you know, to your point, not to the degree that Marcus Smart could, but still someone that can comfortably switch across multiple positions and hold up, draw charges, get his hands in there, get deflections, things of that nature. Offensively, someone who, at least during the regular season, is a much more reliable shooter than Marcus Smart was over the past three seasons for Drew Holiday, nearly 40% from three on over five attempts in Milwaukee. Catch and shoot numbers were strong in those 3 years, 38% in the first year, the title year, 42% after that, 45% last year. There is a pretty drastic playoff drop with those 3-point percentages. And so I do wonder how the context change in this case is going to help those numbers, if they will. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on. But someone that can credibly create for himself, someone that can space, someone that can also attack the basket. And again, the defense is absurd. It's a fun fit for me. I also have some like smaller questions about the Drew fit offensively, but I'll let you bounce to your point first.
The offense is where I think people are sleeping a little bit, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. If you liked what Marcus Smart's growth on offense was, and you saw how important it was, I would ask, what does Drew Holiday already do? And Marcus Smart did a lot of little things, initiating the offense, running pick and roll, posting up. Side note, I'm glad we could just go ahead and tuck that Jason Tatum point guard thing under the table, because I didn't understand that. No disrespect, but it just meant he's going to initiate the offense more, which he already kind of did anyways. So anyways, let me get my quick rant off there.
There you go.
Drew does all that. And you mentioned the shooting. If Drew Holiday is spaced, defenses are going to treat him differently, which should open up some more fun handoff or pick and roll action. If Brown and Tatum are initiating the action and now the ball gets to him, he can attack a scrambling defense. And now if he draws help, look what that opens up. I think that that context is so important, because I'm not going to do the argument thing, because if everyone wants to call Drew Holiday Eric Bledsoe, despite him having 20 and 10 in the finals, like I'm just not going to, you got it. But I think he will have more shots generated for him than he has had before, on top of the shots that he can generate for himself. His ability to drive and get to the basket. I just think overall that lineup is going to have a lot of versatility and playmaking and some good spacing. Positive things should come from it, especially if they're building it off movement again. You think about Drew Holiday's production, and he was an all-star last year.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to double check. The growth he's had offensively, who's going to guard him in this context? How much help is he going to see? You already have to deal with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So again, if Drew is opening things up, look at who the kickouts are to. So I would say keep an eye on the offensive portion. And also, I think it was a bet for Boston on what they have in their locker room. Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser. We can develop someone else to become 8 and 9. They're going to have the regular season try and figure that out. But there's a cleaner pathway to minutes. They can find the right rotation. They're going to be able to stagger to balance things out. So I think it's a big plus for a team to make a swing. Boston makes the most sense.
Yeah. And I think for me, like, very sound points offensively with Drew. And I think a lot more can be said about who's going to be guarding him. Because you think about him playing off of Giannis primarily and also playing off of Chris Middleton. One, Chris Middleton just wasn't there for a large portion of the season last year, so it's different. But also, you think of who the best player is now. Like, Jason Tatum, he's getting your best wing defender. Then Jaylen Brown is getting your second best wing defender, most likely. For Milwaukee, Giannis was likely getting someone in the front court. So you would still have Drew getting the best or second best perimeter guy, if you want to phrase it that way. That shift, while subtle, could be pretty important for what's going to open up for Drew and thus what he can open up for the others. The one question that I had, and not that this is going to be like a make or break boss is now a second round X or something like that. But one thing I'm curious about, one thing that Marcus Smart brought value as for Boston was as a screener, both on and off the ball. And just looking at some second spectrum stuff earlier today, just over the past three seasons, the efficiency numbers in terms of points per possession when either of those guys set on ball screens, it wasn't that different. Smart was slightly more efficient, a little over 1 point per possession on trips featuring a Marcus Smart on ball screen, 0.99 points per possession for Drew. But the volume was so different. Marcus is set nearly three times the amount of screens that Drew has. So I do wonder, like, what the integration period may be like for Drew in this regard, if he's going to be used in a similar way as a partner for Jason Tatum late in games, if they want to go inverted, do you go that route? I guess I want to see just how he's able to play with the stars. If you have Jason Tatum screening for Drew, if you have Jaylen Brown screening for Drew in any kind of offense, I just want to see what that looks like. I won't say it's a problem area, but I am curious to see what that's going to be like.
The same thing we've seen before. It ties back to your who's going to guard him point.
Mm-hmm.
You know the Celtics like to attack matchups, so I imagine he'll be in there. Now, is it going to be roles? Is it just going to be switching and now he's spaced? That part, not sure about. But I think it's going to be something we see.
I got you. And then on the Portland side, again, not sure how long either of the players are going to be kept for Portland. But assuming they're there for like the first month of the season, how do you like the Robert Williams and Malcolm Brogdon fits in Portland?
I was a little hesitant at first because I was like, okay, if Malcolm Brogdon is quote unquote not the happiest person right now, is he going to enjoy having like a similar role for a team that's not in the same position? And now he's behind Scoot and Simons. But I do think, you know, he's a vet, so he'll do what he needs to do, and that's a good support system. Really helps their bench and their depth. It is kind of a logjam, so I was like, I don't know. And then I was thinking, I was really excited about DeAndre Ayton and the runway he was going to get. Now Robert Williams is there, so I was like, can we get the buy-in from both of them on this? But I think overall, it ties into the bigger picture. I mean, if Robert Williams can come off the bench, and that's going to be a really good center rotation for a team that, no disrespect, needed Drew Eubanks to be very, very good last year. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little different when you have DeAndre Ayton and Robert Williams in tow. I think it ties into the bigger picture for them. Like, they just got a lot of things. And you got Dame, traded Dame, got Drew. Now you got another return. So if you look at the talent they brought in and the picks, like, I think everyone tweeted out all that Portland got. And it was like, yeah, I mean,
they're solid. Yeah.
They kind of, you can't boo it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just assumed they would want to go full rebuild. And I think it's clear they want to build something and have the assets to help either right now or get them the people that will help them get there eventually. Mm-hmm. And that's the key point to me. That's where it's like, okay, I am interested to see how you guys mold it. But if you're telling me you're going to have Brogdon and Robert Williams come off the bench, and then they could just throw Matisse out there with that lineup and, hey, let's play defense. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued. I don't know how well it comes together, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah. I guess briefly on the point, Joe Cronin did say a whole lot of media day fun happening as we record on this Monday afternoon. But Joe Cronin did mention they like Malcolm. Like, they think he can help on court, which naturally you shoot the ball the way that he does and drive the way that he does. That's going to take some pressure off of your young guards. But also as a locker room presence. So again, there is, you can see the case for value to, okay, maybe even if he is traded, we're going to trade him at the deadline versus the immediate, we got Drew, we traded him 3 days later because we want to round this out. And so I would just keep an eye on that maybe being a longer stint than people are expecting. I do think because of, again, the shooting, the driving, and then you think of Malcolm defensively, not an elite defender. He is a solid one. And I think he's more equipped to deal with like bigger wings because of how strong he is versus shifting your guards at the point of attack. That does open up some three guard viability. And so to your, you know, kind of thinking through, okay, you got Scoot, you got Anthony, you got Shaden, you want to give them all a runway. I don't think Malcolm gets in the way of that just because of the skill set that he has and his ability to play off of those guys and to also take on some tougher, stronger defensive matchups early on. And so I'm curious to see how much Chauncey Billups experiments with, all right, cool, we're going to go Scoot, Anthony, and Malcolm right now. Or if one of the first two come off the bench, all right, we're going to go Anthony, Shaden, and Malcolm right now. And maybe not hurt as much. So I think it's going to be cool. As far as Robert Williams, like, honestly, the big thing with him naturally is just health. How healthy can you keep him? How healthy will he be? And I think if you are, quote unquote, boxing him into 22, 25 minutes because he's behind Ayton, it can have the double effect of, one, the center rotation is good, to your point. And two, we're not asking him to carry this defense for 32 to 35 minutes. And so it may be a little bit easier to kind of maintain, you know, go the maintenance route with him. And to the earlier point that you made, like, it's not like they can't move him again later in the season if it comes to it, because I would imagine teams are going to come calling for a young, athletic, shot blocking, rim running, can handle and delay action center, and Robert Williams won a reasonable contract. So I like it. Again, we're going to see how Chauncey Billups kind of pieces out this rotation, but I'm a fan. While we are on the NBA front, some more news. Campaign finally got signed. The Milwaukee Bucks adding him to the backup point guard room. Again, Campaign averaged 10.3 points, 45% on twos, 37% on threes, 77 from the line, shade under 5 assists last season. Actually, before I continue, how do you like the Campaign fit? We talked about it a little bit, but any updated thoughts on Cam to Milwaukee?
No updated thoughts. I think it's an important piece to have from a playmaking perspective. So I think he'll really help the bench.
Got you. And on the free agent note again, the Spurs, who acquired Reggie Bullock earlier this offseason in the trade, they agreed to a buyout. So you have someone that shot 38% from three on over 5 attempts last season on the market. Contenders expected to come calling. What would you say is the best fit for Reggie Bullock?
Miami.
Would it be helpful to get another wing in there in space?
Philadelphia.
also could help the wing room.
The Lakers.
Could also be a shooter that would help.
Yeah. The Clippers.
Gotta get a little crowded, but he could certainly help with the shooting and the defense.
What team would he, what contender would he not help in theory?
Yeah, I don't know if there is one. Like, he has such a plug and play skill set. And I think, I feel like I've just been continuing like the Royce O'Neal thing over the last 2 years of the pod. But like, I would also just generally like to see Reggie Bullock in a spot where he doesn't have to take on option number one defensively. And so if you can add him to a wing room that already has a stopper and it's like, oh, this guy can defend too. Maybe we don't see the usual, well, Reggie Bullock is shooting 27% from three for the first month and then just shoots 40% the rest of the year.
Maybe, you know, it'll be fun, but won't happen. I didn't mean to cut you off. Cleveland.
Yeah. I would like that. Cleveland would help, like, not in the contender class, and based on the media day, I don't know what to think of them, but like, just pure roster fit, Reggie in Toronto would be fun. They could use all the wing shooting they could get, but again, not in the contender class, and there's just waves arms wildly happening right now with Toronto and some of the top end stuff. Again, this is why I prefaced the stuff, you know, just on court, guy that can shoot and defend would be That's all I'm saying. Unless I am missing some other antic that I'm not aware of right now. But yeah, I could see it. As training camp, media day is here. Training camp's getting underway. A few injuries, just to sprinkle those in. Draymond Green with an ankle injury. He's projected to be out 3 to 6 weeks, which would take him out for the first, like, what, 1 or 2 weeks of the regular season, depending on recovery time. Could possibly open up. Do you just slot Chris Paul in as a starter by default for the first week and a half of the season now? See how that goes. Then you work Draymond back in. Does that count as a trial period? Does this open up room for Jonathan Kuminga or someone to step in? Does this kind of nudge Warriors brass a little bit? Say, okay, we have to find like a standard contract for this 14th or 15th spot now. We need to add a front court piece. Or is this not anything worth overreacting to?
I mean, I think it just stinks from a team that probably needed him as they're looking to figure things out and come back on a mission to not have Draymond out there. Now you have to alter what your vision was and then bring him back into it, which you can do, but I'm sure you wanted to be a lot better defensively. He's very good defensively. I'm sure you want to have a clear answer to, hey, this is our lineup. Chris Paul, maybe you come off the bench. Let's see what we do. Now, like you said, we have to figure out which path we want to go on. Mm-hmm. I think it probably just opens up a few more questions than you would want. But ultimately, to me, with Golden State, it's about who closes, not about who starts. Mm-hmm. And then how many lineups can you get to anyways? So I'm not overly concerned. It's just not what you would want with what they're trying to put together.
Yeah. Not an ideal start. But again, if you can call it a silver lining, like 3 to 6 weeks, like that's still very early. So even if it is the worst case scenario, like you're not missing a huge block of the regular season. The West is going to be tight, so you always just got to keep an eye on it. So we get to, you know, March or something. It's like, man, they're sixth right now. That 3-6 start may not have been the best, or that 4-5 start may not have been the best for this or whatever, whatever. But we'll keep an eye on it. Cam Johnson from the Knicks suffered a hamstring strain. He's going to miss the beginning of training camp. Toronto center Christian Coloco, who was ruled out of summer league, has also been ruled out indefinitely, still dealing with a respiratory issue. So hope he gets well soon. I am sure there are other minor injuries heading into training camp. We'll talk through them as we get them. Let's shift to the WNBA side very briefly. As expected, Aaliyah Boston wins Rookie of the Year. Probably also as expected, she was voted unanimously as the Rookie of the Year. And this is the first time we had a unanimous selection for Rookie of the Year since 2018. That was the Asia Wilson year. So South Carolina dominance there. Aaliyah Boston averaged 14.5 points, 8.4 rebounds, 2.2 assists, 1.3 steals, and 1.3 blocks. 9 20-point games, 11 double-doubles, which was tied for 9th in the league. 5 20-10 games, which was tied for 7th in the league. One heck of a season for Aaliyah. The all-rookie team was also announced, and it was Aaliyah Boston, Diamond Miller from the Minnesota Lynx, Dorka Juhas, also from the Minnesota Lynx, Jordan Horston from the Seattle Storm, and Lee Monk from the Washington Mystics. Any thoughts on the all-rookie team? And I guess Aaliyah's selection, which isn't a surprise, but any glowing words you have there?
No shock. She was amazing. She's only going to get better. So there's a reason she was unanimous. All rookie team. I was a little surprised Lee Mung got it, but hey, she came in. She knew her job. It was going up, and she was really important for the Mystics team as they battled through injuries. And you know, she earned her role. She earned more minutes, and positive things happened. I thought Grace Berger might get it, but Lee Mung makes sense.
Yeah, like I think that fifth spot, especially I'll toot the horn once again. Especially once
you're not gonna do it again. You're not gonna do it again, are you?
All I'm saying.
Why are you doing it again? But all I'm saying
is that Ivana Dojkic was balling for Seattle, and then she was no longer in the rotation. And before I could even ask, hey, why she ain't in the rotation no more, she was going overseas. And I was like, ah, that would explain why she's no longer in the rotation.
This is going to sound like hateration and holleration in this dancery. But you know how many minutes she played in her last four games?
Not many. Probably as many minutes as the, you know, probably the song length of that one.
18.
Ah. Yeah, it was an abrupt end to the Giovanni show. Cause she was starting, she was hooping, shooting well, playing a hard out defensively. Like, it was a good year. But yeah, once that happened, the fifth spot opened up. So Lee Mung was certainly a candidate. She ended up making it. Haley Jones was another candidate for the spot. You mentioned Grace Berger already. And Dulcie in Seattle as well. Shout out to Lee Mung, though. A little concerning how much she was relied upon for her shooting in Washington. That isn't her fault. People get hurt. You just got to fill in where you fill in. But she did do her job. So what I do?
How you took out the Mystics in the offseason?
I didn't tell you. I'm just saying. Like, ideally, you want her to be like a bonus versus we need you to knock 39% of your threes down. But again, it's not her fault. And it's not anyone's fault. Like, injuries just stink. But to her credit, she stepped up and filled that role well. So that's how she ended up making the team. Congrats to her. While we are on the WNBA front, we did have the semifinals in. The Aces taking out the Dallas Wings in three. The New York Liberty with the pair of wins over the weekend since the last time we recorded. A 92-81 victory on Friday. And then an 87-84 thriller on Sunday. So 3-1 series win there. Steve, what were your general things from the weekend for this Liberty series?
I mean, game three, Liberty did what they were supposed to do. The Sun not having Rebecca Allen, you could really feel it, but they fought their tails off. That game four was such a battle. It was such a fun game to watch. Both teams really swung back and forth at each other. The Sun's activity defensively deserves a hat tip. They were so great to start that game. And throughout the majority of it, trapping and pick and roll, lying around, rotations, closing out, protecting the paint, getting back out to shooters, like they were all over it. And the Liberty, to their credit, kind of took some of those hits. They were working to move the ball. They were trying to find gaps. It was just back and forth. But Nigel Laney and Jonquel Jones have been so unbelievably huge for this team on this run, and they proved it again. But Nigel Laney's aggression and what it opens up, like my mind goes to the timing of the big shot she makes, but then now you don't want her to get a catch in the post and you forget, oh, let's punt. And now you have to show help. And now Jonquel sent a flare for Sabrina on the other side. And it's like, well, yep, this all ties together.
What do you do with that?
Not fun. I thought Breanna Stewart in that game four, it was a Stewie game. They were working. They were searching. They didn't necessarily have it. That stretch that she had when the Liberty were down 10 and the Sun delivered a big blow and she comes back with seven straight. Was huge. I thought the Liberty trying to mix in defenses was huge. Getting the empty side pick and roll. The point of the game where the Liberty decided, oh yeah, we do have Stewie and Jonquel. Duana Bonner, let's have a chat.
It's unfortunate.
Let's just have a chat real quick. It's not Duana's fault. She fought, but I was like, oh yeah, they can tap that button. But I thought both teams gave it everything they had. What were your takeaways?
I think just as a very general note, it was fun to watch the MVP candidates find it over the past couple of games. Like in the game three, the Liberty did win, but something that we both noted was, hey, it feels like Alyssa Thomas is finding a level of comfort as a scorer. And that was a question that I had through the heading into the series and then through the first two games where she just couldn't find it. In game three, you saw her get more comfortable with those drives against Jonquel, like finding the cadence, getting the shoulder into the chest of Jonquel, creating some space, getting some layups. Whenever she got matched up with Stewie, carving out space, using the shoulder to generate a little bit more space, getting to the rim, getting the push shot to start falling for her, and finding the pockets to win to go to that shot versus flowing into something else. It felt like Alyssa Thomas finally started looking like Alyssa Thomas again in games three and in game four. Naturally, Alyssa Thomas finishes the season with another triple double that just felt fitting. So big game for her. And it was, again, nice to see Stewie bounce back the way she had, because throughout this postseason, and something we were talking about during the watch party, was just the path that she's been on in this postseason, or just the path she's had this season, period. Like, I think a large portion of her winning MVP was because as the Liberty were trying to find themselves on both ends, she ended up being the button being tapped. Like, hey, can you navigate, can you control this quarterback, this defense for us as we navigate these switches? And if we play more aggressively, we need you to help, or we need you at the level of screen and the bother ball handlers. Offensively, our ball movement isn't working right now. Can you just get buckets for us, please? You have that load in the first half of the season in particular. Second half, a little bit of a cool down as a scorer with some 40 points games mixed in, but the defense was still very important. Then you get the Washington Mystics in round one, who's very comfortable switching against her, also bringing extra pressure. And then you get this matchup where she just has Alyssa Thomas, who very well could have won Defensive Player of the Year this year. And so it would make sense that maybe the scoring production in particular wasn't there early on. Bounce back in a big way. Timely jumpers, timely drives, timely offensive rebounds. And throughout all of this, which I think gets kind of lost in some what some of her field goal percentage numbers were looking like to close the season and enter in the first round of playoffs, even when she isn't shooting well, she still demands a certain level of attention. Like, you still can't just go pure one-on-one and we don't worry about it. And just her being on the court still opened things up. So the fact that we got to see the balance of she's Stewie, we got to pay attention, and oh snap, Stewie is scoring again. She's also being used as a screener. We don't know what to do with this part based on what the rest of our defensive personnel is. Oh snap, she grabbed the board. She's pushing it up. How quickly can we match up? Do we want this person to pick her up because they're right there? What does that do for the rest of the defense? And so seeing all that come together was fun. And then you nailed it at the top. Jonquel and Badijah Laney were just huge, figuratively and literally, for the Liberty in this series. Like, ultimately, the Sun didn't have a consistently great answer for her. I, again, had tip Olivia Nelson-Adota for her work. But you mix in the inside-out dynamic of Jonquel, it gets kind of tough. Dawana Bonner, as much as she fought, and she gave her all, as she has been since Bree Jones went down for Connecticut. At a certain point, Jonquel Jones is just bigger than you. And that's not anyone's fault. That's just what it is. And so being able to tap that button, or for her to be able to just create extra opportunities on the offensive glass, or just random seals, and you get the post catches, like, man, she is in the restricted area. Oh no, what can you do now? End of that game four, she gets one of the most ridiculous rebounds I have ever seen, with three people in the vicinity. And it's just like, how did she get this board? But like, that's just what she did. And Badijah, man, corner three after drive, after post up, after corner three, after pull up three against an under, after corner three, after drive, after offensive rebound, after big defensive pick six, she was everywhere. And it's not surprising that the one game that Liberty lost in this series was the one where she just didn't have it as a scorer. She has been very important for the Liberty all season long. She's been very important all postseason long. And I'm glad that she is getting the flowers that she's getting for her performance throughout the postseason so far. She's been stellar on both ends of the floor. On the Connecticut front, though, as they enter the offseason, a whole lot of free agents, if I had to guess, a lot, if not all of them, would be back in some capacity. But just to list them out, Bree Jones is an unrestricted free agent. Dawana Bonner, also an unrestricted free agent. Rebecca Allen, also an unrestricted free agent. Tiffany Hayes, her drives were very important in this series. Also the threes, an unrestricted free agent. And then there's Bernadette Hattar, who's a reserved free agent. She can't negotiate with anyone but Connecticut, so we'll see if they bring her back. I guess I'll start here. I guess, what is the priority? Or how would you rank these four, the top four, in terms of priority, who you need to bring back?
I'd say it's probably in that order, unless you want to slide Jones down because of injury. But I think you need all three back for sure. Mm-hmm. And if Tiff Hayes wants to return, then yeah, bring it back. Because I think you saw the vision of what you want to do, what you can do, who can play off AT, what you're missing. You saw the potential even in that closeout game. I thought Rebecca Allen was driving. Dejanay Carrington was driving. So now it's, can we get the guard room that we want, that fits what we're trying to do on both ends of the floor? Mm-hmm. Can you turn the corner and drive? Can you engage the defense? Can you knock down shots on space? Can you take Mickey gets unders? Because the Sun guards were so important this whole playoff run. And when they played well, they looked like a different team. Now, can that become an advantage for you? And you get the full blend of, we have defense, we have AT, we also have Bree Jones, we also can score. Now, what do you do with this?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's enough that you can believe in. You just got to find the pieces that take you over the top.
And I think just bouncing off the guard room point, like there are three unrestricted free agents that could fit that billing for them if they don't bring, you know, depending on who they do or don't bring back, because they have a whole lot of cap space, over 800,000 in cap space projected. But it is a hard cap in the W, so you have to make some choices if you're going to go the max route. But Skylar Diggins-Smith is an unrestricted free agent, and I think it is safe to say that she will not be returning to Phoenix. Natasha Cloud, also an unrestricted free agent. Jordan Canada, who just won, or almost won, Most Improved Player. Someone that can certainly defend, someone that can certainly drive the turn the corner, someone that knocked down shots at a higher clip than she ever has. It may not demand the max salary slot that someone like Skylar did. They do have free agents they can look at here. Not a guarantee that they land any of them, but it is interesting heading into this offseason. If the top priority is we have to improve the guard room, because Ty Harris gave big moments during the postseason. Natija Heideman had spots, but you never felt like we know what we are getting from player X for 25 to 30 minutes. And I think in combination for what you wanted out of Alyssa and what you needed from DeJuana, it's just tough against a team like New York when you just don't know what you're getting in the guard room. So like those players are there. And again, if they just bring this group back, it's a darn good one. And how much of this matchup in particular changes if you have Bree Jones as well? So you just have a bigger body for Jonquel. Does that free things up for DeJuana now, since she doesn't have to exert so much energy and effort and physicality defensively banging with Jonquel? Does she have more of the legs to bomb away from three or to get the drives that we saw during the regular season? So I'm curious to see what Connecticut's post-offseason is going to look like. On the Aces front, oh boy, that game three was, it was a game of basketball, a lot of defense, a lot of turnovers.
Wow, real hoops.
You know what I'm
saying? Real hoops, real playoff hoops. Let's get in the mud and let's see who comes out.
Unironically, real playoff hoops in this one.
I like it.
Took you back. But a 64-61 win for the Aces. They complete the sweep. They still have not lost the postseason game. 13-13 for Asia Wilson, which breaks the 30-point streak for her. 15-6-4 for Chelsea Gray. 11 apiece for Kelsey Plum and Jackie Young. 18 for Arike. 10-15 for Tierra McCowan, just to throw out some of the box score numbers. What was your biggest takeaway from this game, or from the game three?
The Dallas Wings defense. I want to make sure they get a salute. They were active. They were energetic. They were all over the place. They were committing help. Asia Wilson, that space you saw, you're just not going to see it. It's just not happening. You want to drive? Cool. Here's someone meeting you. Here's Tierra McCowan. Or insert big right there. Yep. A walk was switching. Raga Burton was pressuring. Satu was navigating screens. Hey, we're going to show all the help in the world. Y'all just got to make plays. They battled their way through that one. I thought it was an important game for the Aces to, oh yeah, teams can load up. Teams can be active and keep the ball in front. How do we find it? I think it was a very important matchup prior to playing the New York Liberty, who will have someone on Asia and also will show help at the rim. So now let's get a taste of what we need to do. How do we get her on the move? How do we loosen things up? What happens when the driving kick isn't as automatic? But again, the Aces are the champs for a reason. They're versatile. They hung through. Unfortunately for Dallas, what was it, your favorite graphic, where they said, you know, for 4 minutes, Aces on a 9-0 run, Wings haven't scored in 4 minutes.
Can we talk about that for like 8 seconds? Why would you have both of those things at once? Like, the top thing means the bottom thing.
Well, to really paint the picture for folks.
If it's a 9-0 run, like, no, the team with O did not score. Like, that's literally why it's a 9-0 run.
They just want to contrast it. If you're a Dallas fan, so the wing logo pops out to you, it's like, oh, man, they haven't scored in 4 minutes. You know what I mean? Big picture.
I guess. That's my mini rant.
You got any other rants? You didn't like Coach Brondello's NSYNC headgear? Anything else you want to go with?
Nah, the headset was fire. You know how I feel. that was well done. You know how I feel about the in-game interviews, like as a concept. Because like find a break while play isn't happening and talk to the coaches. Because like I want the insight. I don't want the insight while they're trying to do their jobs. Is where my thing is. If you can, again, they go to commercial break at the end of every quarter. If you could do that after the first and after the third, during the commercial break, talk to the coaches and then play it as things are happening. Cool. Like, if you can find that balance, like, I think that's cool. I just don't. The coaches are trying to coach. And then also talk to us, which I appreciate the effort, but that's like most important quarter of the season for the Connecticut Sun as they were down entering the fourth. And Stephanie White is talking to us. And it's just like, I don't think she wants to do this right now. Like, she's trying to help.
I don't know. They gave some fire ones as the playoffs went on. Shout out to Coach Trim. She was destroying those.
She was like they cooked, but it's just like we're putting a little bit extra on the plate of these coaches. I think we can find a cleaner way to do it. That's all. That concludes my rant.
Okay. That's more than 8 seconds, by the way.
No, well, the other one was 8 seconds. This one was a little bit longer. We fleshed it out, though.
It's all right. I'll go back and time it. Don't worry.
Fair enough. Go ahead with the well, actually, on the timeline. That's
fine. Yeah. Petty King.
I see. But I'm with you that Dallas's defense was really impressive. Like, it felt like the Aces could. There were pockets, particularly in the first half, where it felt like the Aces were getting into their offense and finding some stuff. But ultimately, Dallas really did a good job of crowding the space for Asia. It was more aggressive help off of Kia Stokes. The mix of unders, I think, kind of bought and cut off the driving lanes. Like, it was very much a double down from game three. It was like, hey, we can't let you get the paint. Or get a double down from game two, rather. Like, hey, we can't really let you get the paint like that. Asia threw a lot of it over the top rope in game two. But you start to see a little bit more intention in the game two. And in the game three, it's like, no, absolutely not. If you are winning, it is going to be on the perimeter. And it's going to be under these very specific terms. Or if we turn the ball over, y'all push in transition, fine. But really good effort from Dallas. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about after the game, too. Trying to find the balance offensively is where it kind of fell apart for them. They could never really find consistent avenues to get Satu fruitful looks. They couldn't find avenues to get Arike consistent fruitful looks. And again, that is a testament to how well the Aces defended. So I don't want to take that away from them. But I guess like once option A was off the table, it's like, well, here's the ball, create. And like, that's not the way to do it against a team that's this good. That was, in terms of defensive rating, the best defense in the W. Just a 5-point game for Satu in the game three, not the way she want to close out her tremendous season. But like, that also kind of bleeds into the usage wasn't super clean. The Aces made it dirty, but the Wings couldn't really get there consistently either. And so like heading into the offseason, I think it's going to be, you know, something we talked about during the transition defense episode we talked about Dallas not too long ago, where it's trying to find the balance of their pace and how they can get the defense to a level while also playing with enough tempo offensively to where you can, you know, piece things together and have that cohesive unit on both ends. Heading into the offseason, Diamond DeShields, an unrestricted free agent, Odyssey Sims, an unrestricted free agent. Odyssey Sims ended up playing a pretty big role for Dallas during this postseason. Diamond, of course, was out for this year dealing with injury. Satu Sobley, a restricted free agent, did not get an in-season extension, so no supermax for her. I would imagine she has to get maxed off of the season that she just had, I would imagine. The max is going to be around $208,000. Outside teams can offer that. I would imagine Dallas just matches that offer up if someone sends that offer sheet. Diamond and Odyssey gets interesting for me just because it's going to get tight cap-wise. And again, it's a hard cap in the W, so what is the Odyssey number if you want to bring her back? We just haven't seen Diamond DeShields yet. And I think in theory, that blend of athleticism and defense and driving, I think could help. The spacing, not so much, but there are still, I think overall, she is still a positive player, a positive impact player when she's fully healthy. How does the year loss with injury help or hurt her market? Like, what does that look like? Can you find a way to do that? So I'm intrigued to see what they do there. Beyond that, though, something we've talked about, Dallas just needs more shooting in the room, period. And so like striking that balance between the Satu number and also we have to get more shooting to help with Arike and Tierra and Satu and Natasha Howard. Like, they need more space to operate with consistently, especially as you look to this postseason. And If Tierra wasn't on the block, she's in the short corner and they're helping off and they're shading over. Natasha Howard, we're going to lift you on the wing, try to keep that corner empty. Aces didn't care about it. We're helping off. They got to find ways to combat that. How would you like to see Dallas approach their offseason?
I think you nailed it on the head. I think for me, it's just making sure you have the playmaking you need and you have more shooting into the room just to balance out some of these lineups. I think obviously you have the bigs that you like and you at least have a formula there. Arike and Satu are engines in that way. So now it's just filling out the gaps, making sure we have people that can fit the right roles and take our team to the next level so we don't have those kind of stretches where okay, we haven't scored in a while.
Yeah. All right. They nailed it. And said at the top, we will have our official Aces Liberties series preview on Thursday's episode, or I guess Thursday afternoon, Friday morning, whenever it actually releases. So stay tuned for that. Let's shift to the NBA. NBA season is right around the corner. Division preview time is upon us. We will start with the Southwest. And with us starting in the Southwest, we'll go in alphabetical order like we did last year. We will start with the Dallas Mavericks. A 38-44 record last season. Finished 11th in the West. They were 6th in offense, 25th in defense, 20th in net rating. Steve, a basic starting point. What excites you the most about this Mavericks team?
Basketball.
Ah, I see. Good answer.
No, it's Luka and Kyrie together and where they can try and go with this offensively. And then what as a team Dallas will look to or can accomplish defensively. Mm-hmm. That's probably the most exciting part about this team. As far as Kyrie and Luka, we saw some of the high points early in that run as far as being able to use Kyrie with movement, get him off some dribble handoffs, him attacking a pick and roll, and now you have another guy who can force help and get defenses in rotation. Luka's obviously an offense to himself with the pressure that he puts on teams in pick and roll no matter the coverage. We did see a sprinkle, a dot, some seasoning of Luka off ball, not just spotting up, but hey, let's get you off this dribble handoff action. And we'll get to the same thing, but hey, here you go. Get on the move. And we got him posting up. So now you want to see how does that partnership evolve? What's the balance like between them? In late games, how do you use them? That's the one part where I feel like the league was like, hey, you know what? We're going to sort of stick with what we do. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, you guys can screen together. You can put Kyrie one pass away. That's fine. We're still going to double, and then we're just going to pre-rotate to him. So then y'all just in the same boat. Like, it's going over there. So how can they get inventive with closing lineups, using them together, screening actions, handoffs, spacing? I think that's the fun stuff for me. And then we'll get to the defense in a second. But what excites you about the Dallas Mavericks?
Well, I hate to bore you, but I also had the Kyrie and Luka pairing. As top of the list for me. I mean, naturally, that's a lot of offensive talent. And you get a full season of those two together. Only 444 minutes played as a duo last season, which is pretty low, even for that being like the second half move. But a 121.4 offensive rating in those minutes per PvP stats, which is an elite number. Let's just put it there. That is a number that would have led the NBA if that was a team and extrapolated across the entire season. They were elite. To your point about the usage together, if you combine the number of times that Kyrie screened for Luka and Luka screened for Kyrie, what would you think that number was last season?
Low.
Yeah. Yes. A combined 54 screens between the two in all ball situations.
Price is right works.
$1. But yeah, naturally, Kyrie screening for Luka was very fruitful. Nearly 1.4 points per possession on trips featuring a Luka-Kyrie pick and roll. When you flip it with a Luka screening for Kyrie, it's still okay. 1.05 points per possession, but certainly not the super elite number. And with all of this, very low volume. So I do want to see how much chemistry can be built there. I think it gets a little funky with those two since they are naturally just going to be getting the two best perimeter defenders for the teams. And so it's kind of balanced. Okay, how much is this switch going to actually do in terms of creating a mismatch? But that's still pretty low. And I wonder, even if it's not just a pure we're mismatch hunting, let's screen, do you see Luka double drag with Kyrie as the second screener? Or Kyrie as the first screener and then flowing off of that? Are there ways for them to get creative in that regard, to use them as screeners and open things up? But I do start there. And then secondarily, and I think this will flow into like one of my questions that I have as well, but like secondarily, listening to Jason Kidd mention that, yeah, we're starting two rookies in the first preseason game. What kind of impact do we see just from the young guys, period? I have one in particular in mind I'm saving a little bit later, but if they're starting Omax, if they're starting Derek Lively, like how far along are they with their offseason work? Because Jason Kidd seems pretty complimentary of both of them. But like, do we see them playing like a combined 32 minutes a night? Those two in particular, and providing defense and general energy cutting in the case of Omax, and like the screening and diving from Derek Lively. Like, should I expect Jason Kidd to kind of reverse course and play the young guys? Like, that would be an interesting development to me.
I wonder if it's as much reverse course, or these are the guys that are here because they do the things that we need to do and we need to get back to this direction, as opposed to trying to jam it in with people that we have and we already know. Mm-hmm. So I was intrigued when that just kind of came out. Like, no, they're starting right from the jump. I like it. I think this is kind of a bet on those two, at the very least, being able to be do your job type of guys. I think their skill sets work with what Dallas either A, needs, or B, typically likes to do, and they can grow from there. So while, yeah, you rookies, it's tough. You're working on consistency. You got to work on defense. But when you look at what Dallas does, oh, Max Prosper, you know he's going to work defensively. The shot may come along, going to drive closeouts. That usually works in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And also gives you a defensive versatility, where Grant Williams and Omax can take some of those matchups. And hey, Luka and Kyrie, y'all just kind of figure it out. We got you. And then with Lively, his ability to screen and roll next to Luka is huge. They've been looking for and needing that kind of role threat defensively. I think, okay, here's what you got to do, young fella. But I mean, they're based on activities. So I just, you know, I understand people being like, well, do you want to depend on rookies defensively? And I'm like, well, what did you think of Dwight Powell's defense last year, or Maxi Kleber's defense last year, or like the bar is the bar. And so if you have the guys that you can mold, I think you'd probably feel better about it than I hope this works. That was what my gut went down to.
No, I think that makes sense. And I think you can never assume health in the NBA, but like, if you can assume health between Kyrie and Luka, I think the hope is we are going to score enough to where during the regular season, at the very least, we should win enough to be in the playoff picture. And that may give us a little bit more leeway to deal with some growing pains with some of the rookies. And especially if they are going to eventually fill the mold that we need filled. And so again, like, this doesn't feel like a Jason Kidd thing super, if you go back through all of his coaching stints. And so again, I want to see how quickly this turns, if it does at all. But it makes sense to kind of give those two in particular the shot. I think it is. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say real quick, everyone else is kind of a proven person. You know what you're getting mm-hmm. from the guys off the bench. And I think secretly it balances out your second unit as far as being able to have more scoring on the second unit, as opposed to, hey, here's all our scores. Actually, can one of y'all play with them? Because we need you to do stuff. Like that second unit has some bucket getters and some of the guys who could either know what Dallas wants to do or will be active enough to do it defensively. So I'm intrigued by that part of it. Continue, my bad.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, it is interesting. I guess, like, if I'm trying, this doesn't even qualify as like a respectfully messy, but like, you get two rookies starting early. If I'm Jaden Hardy, like, do I just feel like, hey, man, like I did kind of hoop second half of the year. Like, do I get like a preseason shot, even if I do settle back into a bench role? Like, what does that look like? But no, that was the only point I was going to make. Like, I guess him and I guess to a lesser degree, just Josh Green's like, hey, wait a minute. But am I penciled in here too? Or like, what are we trying to do?
Grant Williams, buds.
Yeah, that's.
they did not get Grant Williams for no reason. And I may be jumping the head, but to me, he's the X factor. I am very intrigued to see what he looks like in a new environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can talk about with Coach Kidd, but when he has a person that he understands and believes in, they tend to do well. I remember when Jared Dudley had that stretch.
Which one?
Where it was like, hey, yeah, I went to Milwaukee. And I was like, oh, dang. Like, I feel like Grant Williams could just work mm-hmm. in Dallas to a degree that we're not really anticipating because of the context we last saw him in. So I'm intrigued there.
I got you. I guess while we're on the X Factor front, like my X Factor for the season, or a potential breakout guy, or someone who could be a breakout guy, in my opinion, it is Josh Green for me. I think him having some pretty real shooting growth last season. Again, the volume still isn't super high, but him taking a jump as a spot up shooter is important. In addition to, he is someone that can catch and drive. He is someone that can connect things in the half court. And he is someone that has taken on tough defensive assignments throughout his young career so far. And so if the volume ups, if we get even more use of him as a screener, because that's something that's grown over his career, he could end up being like a very, he could just be a very valuable wing for this Dallas team. That you look at some of the wing step, like there are questions about it. I guess that kind of, I guess the various degrees, depending on if you count Grant Williams as a wing or a forward, like I would have him on the forward group. Like with a little bit of eyebrow raise worthy stuff in the wing room, like Josh Green could answer that. I think he'd be pretty valuable. So that's kind of where I went with the X Factor front. You've already hinted at some of the stuff, but what would you say is your biggest question about Dallas Mavericks heading into the year?
Defense and lineups. So can you hit the right notes defensively that you're looking to? We've seen when it works what the Mavericks can do. We've seen what happens when it doesn't work. And now you really are trying to have to outscore them. Can you just at least find a base that your team can execute and you can be comfortable with? How much help can you show? Like, they're at their best when they're active defensively, but how many rotations do you really want to have to make? Like, they're one of the best X-out teams in the league, but the problem is they have to do it so many times, it doesn't have the same impact. Mm-hmm. How do you help and protect Luka and Kyrie when they're on the weak side making some of those rotations? Like, I feel like for this to work, Dallas has to get closer to the level of defense we've seen from them in the four, before, a couple seasons ago. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a team effort. I mean, you should have more people who can guard some of those matchups. You should have more bigs that may fit what you're trying to do. So I think the concept is there. They just got to make sure they fix that in right away. Mm-hmm. That way you can get in transition, run, all that good stuff. And then can you find the right mix lineup-wise? What combinations are you going to hit? Because while, yes, you probably are going to have a stronger second unit, who's going to get the first crack? Who's going to be next? What's going to be the determining factor? Do you need defense? Do you offense? Are these guys going to have room to grow? I just, you know, that's where I'm like, who's the closing lineup? How often can you go small?
Yeah.
I just kind of have those kind of questions with them.
And I think quickly bouncing off the small thing, like how small will they go is another question that I have. And I think that's partly dependent on how reliable the wing room becomes. Because like we saw Grant Williams play center in Boston. I don't know if Dallas has enough for him to play the five a bunch. And I think one of the questions that you floated out when we first talked about the Grant Williams signing is that if you have him and Maxi Kleber on the floor at the same time, like I think you can kind of piece together what it looks like defensively with a lot of switching. But like offensively, do you have a roller for Luka or a roller for Kyrie? They're good enough isolation scores that they technically don't need one. But if you're just talking about that kind of balance, like do you get that out of either of them? And so it kind of blends into your general lineup point. I think that's a good one. And to the defense, like they actually get into one of the mailbag questions that we got from my dear friend Anthony, who basically asked, like, what would you have as Dallas's base, essentially? And what would be somebody
you cut a promo on you?
Huh?
You cut a promo on
you? No, not yet, but we, you know. We working on it. I got to get on that man's pod before the regular season starts.
I think they're based at the level and drop back. I don't think you want to trap. I don't think you want to be in a drop unless Derek Lively has just shown something or has something in the back pocket that's Tyson Chandler-esque and you can make that work. Because then you can stay out of rotation. That should be fine. Otherwise, you're giving up a lot of space. And I don't know if you have the navigators, but probably one of those two. I don't like full out blitz for them. It's too much rotation.
Got you. And something else that Anthony mentioned, of course, how much zone do you think we see from Dallas this year?
A good amount. A good bit. I think we're going to see a lot of it.
Okay. Keeping it true with just the Dallas basketball teams in general, I suppose. We keep it right there. What do you think Dallas's best lineup is going to be this year?
Their best lineup?
Their best lineup.
Luka, Kyrie, Grant Williams. Heck, I might actually just say the starting lineup, to be honest with you. I think that might be their best one, unless Josh Green goes off. I'll tell you the one I want to see.
What you got?
Just for chaotic purposes. Give me Seth Curry, Kyrie, Luka, Grant Williams, and Lively. Let's have some fun.
Oh boy. That's an interesting, like, I guess as a general, I don't know, how do you feel about the guard room? Seems like a very basic question. But, like, Seth Curry's good when he's healthy. I'm intrigued by what Jaden Hardy has shown already. And he has room to grow. Dante Exum is back. For however much you care about that, I am very intrigued. But I'm also Nakia. So, yeah, I'm going to be intrigued by that one. But it kind of blends into your lineup question, though. Like, how do you find that blend? Like, Dante's someone that can probably slide in 1-3. You feel a little bit of unease with him defending some threes. But he has the size to do it at the very least. Like, it also just blends into, I guess, my question. Like, how small does Dallas go with some of these lineups? Because they can throw out some interesting three-guard stuff. They can go Grant at the five. Is it super viable? Because I'm just unsure about their defensive personnel as a whole right now. I think a good bit of it can be answered by we get the best defensive effort we ever see from Kyrie. We get the best defensive effort from Luka that we've seen so far. Reminiscent to, I guess, the year before last when Dallas was surprisingly a top 10 defense, where Luka is peeling in early and on the weak side. And he's making these rotations at full speed and he's holding up against stronger dudes. Can he just fully do that? Does he acquiesce to Kyrie and some of the other players enough to where he doesn't have to do everything offensively? And does that energy conservation help him defensively? Can you get back to, you know, so does Dallas end up being like 16th in defense this year? I think if they get to 16th, that's a success based on what their personnel is right now. And considering Luka's an offense onto himself and Kyrie can just throw all of your schemes over the top rope as a scorer, like that's a pretty strong baseline if everyone's healthy. And I guess the biggest question with Dallas is always just going to be like how available are the stars going to be? Like Luka has missed time in every season of his NBA career and Kyrie has missed time in lots of recent seasons. We'll leave it there. And so like that's just going to hover over. You just never know at that point. From the basketball point, though, I'm still very much like, what is this defense going to look like? And how much runway do young guys get? Did you have any other Dallas thought? Oh, actually, my lineup, my bad. Kyrie, Luka, Josh Green, Grant Williams, Maxi Kleber is the lineup that I'm most excited to see. And I think will end up being the best lineup. And for what is
Maxi Kleber, not Lively? Have you seen that man roll?
I have. I just need to see. I guess I just need to see the defense on the NBA level. Like he's going to be someone I want to get more playing time because duh. But like I know what Maxi can do. And I also just know how much Jason Kidd trusts Maxi on top of that. And that just feels like a very switchable group in general. If you want to go back to last season, we're going small sample size theater. Kyrie, Luka, Josh Green, and Maxi Kleber on the floor at the same time. Plus 13 in 34 minutes, which 34 minutes obviously is very low, but plus 13 in that small amount is pretty darn good. That seems like a group that'll work. And Grant Williams can connect things, can knock down shots, can defend. Though to your point throughout the regular season last year, stars didn't mind going at Grant. And so we'll see if he can get the hashtag reputation back, what kind of bounce back he has defensively. This season, but that concludes my Dallas thoughts. Did you have any closing thoughts before we move?
No, who's next?
All right, alphabetical order it is. So the Houston Rockets are up. They were 22-60 last season, 14th in the West. They were 27th in offense, 29th in defense, 29th in net rating. Steve, what are you most excited about with this Houston team?
What's the reset button look like? What does it look like when Fred VanVleet can not just score, but make plays and keep you organized and keep things moving? What's it look like with a Dylan Brooks on your team who's going to compete every single night on both ends of the floor and wants to prove his worth more than people think he is? What's it going to look like with all your young players now being held to a higher standard and going to have to compete for the opportunities that they just had, going to have to compete to stay on the floor, going to have to compete to win? Can they translate what they've shown into winning basketball? How much does the insertion of the coaching staff and some of the players, does that help Jalen Green? Does that help Jabari Smith Jr.? Does that help Alperen Sengun? Do they grow? And then what do you run offensively with this team? Are we going to see more Green and Jabari off ball being used that way? Are we going to see more drive and kick where now they can hurt you multiple ways? They can be closeouts, play together, open things up that way? Is it more Sengun initiating, more handoffs? Just what buttons do they tap? And then more importantly, can you get the buy-in to play defense as a team? And will that ultimately be the thing that, oh, okay, this is a lot better. but we still have to figure this part out.
This is, I'm very intrigued by this Houston team. Who's left on this Houston team at this point? For me, I want to see this group with a point guard, an actual point guard. Like Fred VanVleet is here. How much directing will he do for this Houston team? How much pressure can he take off of Jalen Green? How much pressure can he take off of all of these creators? And with Fred being able to oscillate between on and off ball usage, what does that partnership look like for Alperen Şengün? Someone that can be used as a post hub, someone can be used as a handoff hub. What does that two-man connection look like? Also, Amen Thompson is just in the building. And in light of Waves Arms Wiley, there are going to be more guard minutes for him. So I don't have to worry about that as much. What kind of runway does he get? How early does the defense pop? How early does the playmaking pop? I'm going to be keyed in on that. So I'm very excited to see just what it looks like. Also, quick Jalen Green note as he continues to improve as a creator. Over 6 free throw attempts per game for him last year. Which you think of Jalen Green, you think about the general explosiveness, but also like the step backs and the side steps and stuff like that. He put his head down last year. Slowed down a tad. Like there's still some drives without a plan for him. But like him starting to get more efficient points, I think is going to be helpful. And being, again, playing off of someone that can direct the offense should lead to some even easier opportunities. And if we get internal growth around him, we see a better Jabbar if he's able to carry over even a semblance of what we saw for him in Summer League. What does that look like? With Dylan Brooks in tow, taking on tougher defensive assignments, like, do we actually just, we just flat out get Jalen on, like, the third best perimeter player? What does that do? Jalen still has to continue to grow defensively, naturally, but what does that do for him offensively? Like, do we just see a better offensive context for him? And that kind of flows into, like, the general coaching point and stuff. Like, what is this going to look like? What is this usage going to be like? Does he get easier looks? Do we see an even better version of Jalen Green this year? Heading into it, what is your biggest question mark for this team?
Defense. Defense, defense, defense. What's going to be the attempt? Can you do it? Does Şengün have a scheme? Are you going to give the consistent effort? That's my first question. What about you?
Defense was technically as my second question in my notes because that felt baked in. Just a quick note on the Şengün point, per second spectrum. 39 players defended at least 1,000 picks last season or pick and rolls. Şengün was 39th in points per allowed, points per possession allowed on trips. 1.02 points per possession on any trip featuring a pick and roll defended by Alperen Şengün. That is not very good. My first question was going to be, what exactly is the wing slash forward hierarchy? Because I think that will go a long way to me in determining how this defense is going to go. How much more Tari do we see? How much more Jabari do we see? Does the minute load stay the same? But what kind of uses are we going to get for those two? They just have a lot of talent, which I think is one of good thing. But two, in terms of figuring out what the lineup combinations are going to be and thus what kind of scheme synergy are we going to have, that's going to be important. Because something that I've said on this pod pretty consistently is like, I don't really love Şengün in a drop. I think he's going to be best utilized if he's at the level or a little bit higher and you get rotations behind that. And if you're telling me that you're going to get high minute counts for both Jabari Smith, who can do some good things as a weak side rim protector, Tari Eason, who flies around and can just wreak havoc, I feel a little bit better about it. You have a vet like Jeff Green, who doesn't clean things up like he used to, but at least has the positional IQ know-how where to be. He just came from Denver as a team that will have a big at the level. Whenever he played alongside Jokic, obviously in the smaller lineups, he was doing more switching. But you at least have more length and athleticism on the back line now. So I think you have the leeway to get more aggressive with Şengün. So I just kind of want to see what that looks like. And then zooming out beyond that, again, they have a lot of talent. We've talked about Amen already, talked about Jabari, talked about Tari. How much is Cam Whitmore even playing this year? We saw how explosive he looked in Summer League. You add those young guys in addition to Dylan Brooks, in addition to Jeff Green. I'm curious to see how they piece it out. So I guess just wing slash forward hierarchy, how they go about that. And then flowing into your point, Şengün has to find the coverage. I think at the level is going to be his coverage, which I don't know if he's going to be elite at it, but I think that gives him the best chance and Houston the best chance to kind of fly around and rotate behind him. That's where I go. Who's your X factor for the season or a breakout player that can drastically change things for Houston?
What if I pick neither?
Ah. Hey, man. This,
I want to go Dylan Brooks. I do think he's going to have a large impact. I think for me, it's Jalen Green. I think he's the ceiling raiser for this team and this group. Mm-hmm. How does he look in this context? Does this make it easier for him? Does he have a lead just based on that? Is his scoring more impactful? Where do we go from there?
Okay, I got you. For me, I think it's going to be Tari Eason. But I think just his general energy as a rebounder, the way he flies around defensively, the drives quietly got better as a shooter as the season went on. And then summer league, like he just looked a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hands. On top of all of that stuff, I'm really excited about what he can be. And you think through like the KJ Martin trade, he's now a Clipper. That should be even more runway for Tari. I mean, I think if he really proves himself to be a two-way impact player, and if the shot proves to be real with, you know, say he shoots 36% for 3-on-4 attempts, that's not anything that's blazing the world, but that's enough to keep defenses honest. And that should open up some of those closeout attacks. Or if you're, you know, garnering attention elsewhere, those cuts open up for him. He's really good at filling those lanes. I'm looking at what Tari does, and I think that can drastically change. If nothing else, that just gives Houston another piece. Like, hey, if we want to get into the star hunt somewhere, if we want to take the next step next year, if this is a 37-win team or something like that, we can now use Tari as the focal point of something versus aiming a little bit higher in the hierarchy, if that makes sense. What lineup are you most excited to see with this Houston team?
The starting lineup is the one for me, but if I have to go outside the box, one I just want to see for my personal fun, give me Fred, give me Jalen Green, give me Dylan Brooks, give me Thompson, give me Jabari Smith Jr.
Ooh. I'm intrigued with I actually had a question for you about that. How often do you think we see Jabari at the five this year?
Not a lot. Mm. I think it'll be situational.
Got you.
I think it's something they could get to, but you have Shingun, you added Jock Landale, there's Tari Eason as well. I don't know that's going to be baked in from the start. Could be wrong, but I think it's something that's more back pocket for them.
I got you. Like, that's something that I kind of want to see develop because I think he can be like, we can switch everything. Well, we can kind of load up on 6'7 to 6'9 dudes and just switch and simplify and we can fly around. And I think Jabari getting stronger can help with that. Again, you don't want him defending like an Embiid, but like, who do you want defending an Embiid? Because he's that freaking good. But I would like to see them sprinkle some of that in. As far as a lineup that I want to see, the no small lineup for me, give me Amen at point. Amen, Jalen, Tari, Jabari, and Shingun. And I'll quickly note the last four, Jalen, Tari, Jabari, and Shingun. Only a -5 in 106 minutes together last season. Which you think about, again, Houston was 29th in net last year. So the fact that this was nearly a neutral quartet is interesting to me. And so adding any fifth, if you want to put Fred back in there, like I think that can end up just being a positive lineup for Houston. I am intrigued. We do have some mailbag questions on the Houston front. This one comes from Aaron. Says, hey, Nikias and Steve, I have a bit of a macro question, but it's the Rockets offseason science that provoked it. Do you think there's quantifiable value to a young player's development in being on a competitive team? The Rockets' young core are all around 5 years away from when most players start to peak. And from a pure, let's just acquire as much talent as we can standpoint, the moves for Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks mean there's a good chance they'll lose their pick this year if we assume 30 to 35 wins. It feels like other successful rebuilds like OKC and Orlando have compiled young talent and moved closer to 500 organically, but Houston's making a concerted we need to be better this year effort with their signing.
They're only here because they're behind. Mm-hmm. That group had not gelled and done what it was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so they were behind the eight ball. They had to improve the culture in a different fashion than, hey, I hope this gets better. No. Y'all come here and we are serious. This is going to work. We are going to have talent. We are going to be better. And if you can't get in the program with us being better, you probably don't need to be here. So we can start that process. We're going to catch up. We are going to catch up. We're not doing this no more.
Not the fast forward button. It's the hold down X to skip the cutscene.
Yeah. Skip intro. Let's go.
Kobe doing work. All right. Also throwing a PS. Since you're talking Southwest, I just want to give a shout out to Najee Marshall, who turns into the most entertaining player in the world when Zion or BRL out. Also, thank you for the W content. Thank you for listening. There we go.
Salute.
There we go. Any closing Houston thoughts?
No.
All right. Fair enough. We will then move to the Memphis Grizzlies, who were 51-31 last year, second in the West. They were 11th in offense, third in defense, fourth in net rating. Steve, what excites you the most about this Memphis Grizzlies team?
the fact that they are going to have to build their base to start this season. No messing around. No, hey, we can just kind of escalate our defense or we can kind of do our movement. No. You need that right from the jump, especially with Ja out. So what base are you going to build while he is not playing basketball? We've seen the movement increase from year to year from Memphis. We've seen more handoffs. Adams is a hub. Jaren occasionally. We've also seen things stagnate over and over and over and over and over, especially late in games where it's, hey, Ja, can you run a pick and roll? Or, hey, there's 10 on the clock. Let's now do something. You do not have that luxury to start this season. I think it will benefit you in the short term and the long term to, A, we have to defend. And having someone like Marcus Smart, who does defend, and having Jaren Jackson Jr., who does defend, mm-hmm. and watching them do defensive things together should be very fun. The buy-in will be there on that end. Like, if you're telling me Marcus Smart, Jaren Jackson Jr., Steve Adams, they're going to compete. And I think if their defense is ahead of the game, they'll be in a really good spot. Offensively, you're going to have to build a base of movement. Hey, Desmond Mann, more playmaking, more shooting. Yes, more scoring. You get to do more stuff. Marcus Smart, hey, you have a runway to do all the stuff that you did there. You can be a screener. You can post up. You can initiate offense. Luke Kennard, run off some screens, my boy.
Shoot the ball. Shoot the ball. Shoot the ball. Luke, shoot the ball. Shoot the ball.
Don't stop shooting. Shoot through it.
God.
Jaren Jackson Jr. I know everyone wants to talk about the actual FIBA World Cup. He had a really good summer. He was very aggressive. How much can they blend that into what they do? And do we see another jump from him offensively? My larger point is, what do you find during this stretch? And how do you use that to elevate your team? So now we're rolling. We got Ja back. Let's go.
There we go. I think for me, I will get the hashtag Nikias one out of the way. I'm really excited to see Brandon Clark healthy again. That man is really good at basketball. The screening slips, just what he does as a connector, the switchability defensively. Him and Jaren on the court together, they just destroy worlds in terms of that rating as well. So, like, I'm happy to see. I need to see Brandon Clark back. They had some questions at the four once he went down in the playoff setting in particular. As far as the big picture thing that I'm excited about, I'm glad you hit on Jaren, because for me, it is, what kind of growth are we going to see from him offensively again this year? Because second half of last year, that man was driving and posting up and driving. Three ball was up and down, but we know that he can knock down shots for perimeter. With no Ja, he's going to have more of a runway offensively. Is this the year that all of the Jaren Jackson offense things work at the same time? Because it's felt like throughout his career, he is shooting really well from three, but like the drives are kind of iffy. All right, the drives are here, the jumper ain't really there. All right, the drives and the jumper are kind of falling at the same time, but decision-making's kind of off. Here come these charges that he's taking because he's kind of out of control right now. Is this can this be the stretch where we get 38% from three Jaren, and also the post-up efficiency is up, and also the drive efficiency is up, and also he's getting five to six times a game? I want to see what he does with this runway. And I agree with you. I do think overall he had a really positive summer. Like, we made the commentary and it turned into a joke. Like, first Team USA set, here's a Jaren post-up. And most of the time he scored on that post-up. And so if he's able to consistently bring that for Memphis, it just adds another dimension. And I think because of just who he is offensively, someone that can space, someone that can opt as like a closeout attacker, someone that can obviously screen for you, I think the integration for Ja is going to be pretty seamless. Like, I don't think it turns into Jaren is averaging 21 points per game over the first 25 and then 16 since Ja came back. Just by nature of who he is, that should be something that you could just place that together. So I'm excited to see what Jaren does with this runway. Biggest question mark for you concerning this Memphis team?
Who on the bench can break out? Memphis has always been next man up. Last year felt like the first year I was like, Conchar, Roddy, Santi. Not that they were bad, but okay. There's a ceiling here. I think are we getting close to that ceiling? Mm-hmm. Who can now reestablish themselves? Who got better? Do we see what Santi Aldama did in the World Cup carry over? Because we know if you have a good summer, generally that carries over. So is he now going to be a factor in a bigger way offensively and defensively? What does David Roddy add to his game? He earned his minutes. Can the shooting of Olarabia pop? Do we get a return from some of the guys we've seen before, Bryce Tillman or Zaire? They had the pieces, but now those guys are going to have to elevate. The good news is you're going to have a runway early in the season. Mm-hmm. The bad news is you're going to have to nail that runway or else someone else will. Mm-hmm. So that's probably my biggest question mark is can the collective now come together or is Nekias going to be upset about Derrick Rose minutes at some point in the near future?
That is a tremendous shot. It's funny because like two things in my notes. One, a question I have for you was who do you believe in more moving forward, David Roddy or Jake LaRavia? So that's funny. Two, the first thing I have for this question is hashtag waves arms wildly. So that's fun. But beyond that, my first question is just how well will they hold up without Ja in these first 25 games? We saw a couple of years ago, Ja missed a bunch of time. The Grizzlies won a whole bunch of games because their defense just leapt off the page once Ja went down. And that turned into some annoying, are they better without Ja? Like, no, they aren't. And then last year, Ja missed some time. It was not the same. They were not world beaters without Ja Morant last year. So, like, can they find themselves? Where do they find themselves? Can they be 14-11 as Ja comes back? Can they be 17-8? Will they be 10-15? Because, again, I project the West to be pretty darn tight this year. So, like, however they handle this stretch could go a long ways to when we having these Grizzlies need to win their next three to avoid the play-in type conversations. Like, this can be the stretch that ultimately did it for them. Or they won't have to worry about that because they started out as strong. So, like, I have that general question. I also just wonder, like, how much shooting they're going to have. Which year, which shooting version of Marcus Smart are we going to get for this team with or without Ja? You mentioned Zaire Williams, who, funny enough, he's my X factor for this or my breakout candidate for this one. But one, what kind of runway will Zaire get? But two, will the shot be there? Because I think that's also going to go a long ways to determining how much of a runway he gets. Because he does fit the mold of rangy wing defender, and we saw it in his rookie year. I still remember the games where he just gets the Steph Curry assignment off rip and like did as well as you can against Steph Curry. No, obviously that's not just in his entire defensive foundation, but point being, like we've seen him take on tough assignments and not look out of sorts. And Memphis is a team that, especially early on, is going to lean on their defense. And so if he can find enough offensively, I think that room is going to be there for him. But he's going to have to knock down shots. Luke Kennard, we know he can shoot. Is this going to be 4.5 attempt Luke Kennard, or are we going to finally get the 8 or 9 attempt year from him that he can do, that multiple coaches have been asking him, hey, please shoot the ball. We know you can shoot. Get those shots up. How much will we get from him? Jake LaRavia can shoot. How many will it take? What is his runway going to be? I already talked a little bit about Jaren. The three-point shooting in particular has been up and down for him. They're going to have to be able to space the floor. And then once Ja comes back, they're still going to have to be able to credibly space the floor for him and open things up. I think back to the mailbag question that we had about Ja and what the Memphis offense has been over the last 2-3 years in lineups in which are like 5 out adjacent. If they can open that up, like they're going to be a really good team. They were a really good team last year. So I think shooting and general health is where it's going to be for me. Who is your X factor or breakout candidate for this Grizzlies group?
It's Luke Kennard.
Okay.
It's got to be Luke Kennard. They need his shooting. I think his shooting can elevate. He can stay on the floor defensively. You got a few lineups you can get to. So it's Luke Kennard for me.
Got you. I had Zaire or Luke, so I don't have to hang here too long. Lineup you're most excited to see with this Grizzlies group?
Ja, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr., Steven Adams. Alternatively, the one I'm really the most excited to see about, see if they can get to, Ja, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bain, Luke Kennard, Jaren Jackson Jr.
Ooh, see, I thought about having that down. Is Marcus Smart your 4 in that lineup?
Pretty much.
That could be fun. That could be fun. And I would also just love to see like Marcus Smart as a screener for insert player here. Hey, screen for Jaren real quick. Screen for Ja. Screen for Luke. If they could hold up enough defensively, that sounds like that's the making of a really fun two-way lineup. For me, it's Ja, Smart, Bane, Brandon Clark, and Jaren. Over the past two seasons with Ja, Bane. With Ja, Bane, Dylan Brooks, who's no longer there, obviously. Brandon Clark and Jaren on court last two seasons. Plus 67 and 101 minutes together. And again, if you just isolate the minutes with Clark and Jaren together, they blow other teams out of the water. Which is why, again, very nerdy of me, but I'm very intrigued to see Brandon Clark back in the rotation full time. Hopefully he's able to stay healthy. Very excited to see that one. any closing Memphis thoughts before we move?
No closing thoughts there.
All right, well, news portion went a little bit longer than anticipated, so actually, let's table this for the next pod, since we're going to have, unless James Harden gets traded or something, but we should have a lot more runway heading into the Thursday pod, so we'll stop here. We will start next pod, we'll go into New Orleans and San Antonio, and I think we have the Central Division coming up next, so we'll do those two and then head into the Central Division. We'll do it like that then. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. We are still watching the WNBA playoffs. The WNBA finals start this upcoming Sunday, so you want to watch with the Dunker Spot crew. The link to the room should be hyperlinked into your podcast description. If so, just click on that link, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. And if it isn't hyperlinked, just copy and paste that link into your browser. And once again, it is free, no shenanigans. Just going to be like a cable login or a League Pass login, whatever you have. You'll see the options as you make your profile. It's going to be free. Get alerts for us. We are doing live analysis during these games. You actually get to watch along with us. So live analysis, a lot of fun conversations in the room. Also just a general inclusive community. So if you want to vent about work or whatever, we also do that too. We have a lot of fun in the rooms, and it's not just basketball. We're also watching wrestling. We've tapped in with volleyball. We sprinkled in some reality television. Like, we really just hang out. Like, I'll stream 2K. Steve and I played FIFA against each other. It's a lot of fun. So come rock with us in the Dunker Spot watch party room. It's a fun group. It's a fun time. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.